Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us today. We have a special interview with Christian artist and Dove Award winner Mark Schultz, who is coming in to do the Gift of Hope concert. And happy to announce that we have actually added a second concert because the first one is sold out. So a 5:30 show added, and ticket information and so forth will be available very soon about that. So Mark is our interview this morning. Stick around for that. Gene Young will have news for us, of course, in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Renee Leach with the first and second reading, and Deacon Bill Radio with the gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Isaiah. Zion said, "The Lord has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. Can a mother forget her infant? Be without tenderness for the child of her womb? Even if she should forget, I will never forget you," the word of the Lord. A reading from the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. Brothers and sisters, thus should one regard us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God. Now it is, of course, required of stewards that they be found trustworthy. It does not concern me in the least that I be judged by you or any human tribunal. I do not even pass judgment on myself. I am not conscious of anything against me, but I do not thereby stand acquitted. The one who judges me is the Lord. Therefore, do not make any judgment before the appointed time until the Lord comes. For he will bring to light what is hidden in the darkness and will manifest the motives of our hearts. And then everyone will receive praise from God. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "No one can serve two masters. He will either hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds in the sky. They do not sow or reap. They gather nothing into barns. Yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are not you more important than they? Can any of you, by worrying, add a single moment to your lifespan? Why are you anxious about clothes? Learn from the way the wild flowers grow. They do not work or spin. But I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was clothed like one of them. If God so clothes the grass of the field, which grows today and is thrown into the oven tomorrow, will he not much more provide for you, O you of little faith? So do not worry and say, 'What are we to eat? Or what are we to drink? Or what are we to wear?' All these things the pagans seek. Your heavenly Father knows that you need them all, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given you besides. Do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. Sufficient for a day is its own evil." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, prayer has many different forms and changes people's lives in many different ways. For Bernardo and Carmela Sanchez of Sioux Falls, the power of prayer has touched their lives in a deep way. "Everything we have in this world, God gave us," said Bernardo Sanchez. "God provides everything we need to have, and God gives us everything we have. So why not help people who pray for us? Help them out." The group is the Perpetual Adoration Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, a religious community dedicated to praying for others. They are women who have a special place in Bernardo and Carmela Sanchez's hearts. Their love for the Perpetual Adoration Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament has led the parishioners of Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish in Sioux Falls to joyfully take a leap of faith to donate all of the painting and staining for a permanent home for the sisters. The Perpetual Adoration Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, like all religious communities in the diocese, welcome your prayer request. To make a request, learn more about the community, or to participate in the monastery project that's ongoing, go to www.perpetualadorationsisters.org. You can also read and see more about the Sanchez's efforts and the Perpetual Adoration Sisters in the March edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in Homes Across the Diocese soon and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, Ash Wednesday seems to offer contradictory messages. The gospel reading for the day is about not doing public acts of piety, but the very act of getting ashes and walking around with them is pretty public. This becomes even less of a private moment when people get post pictures of themselves online with their ashes following the hashtag trend of recent years. The online posting of one's ashes, often marked in the form of a cross on the forehead, thrills some people but disappoints others. Some say it diminishes the significance and penitent symbol of the ashes with their somber reminder that humans are made from dust and one day will return to dust. Others, though, say that sharing the Ash Wednesday experience with the broader virtual public makes it more communal and also is a way to evangelize. Those who aren't on either side of the argument say it all comes down to why it's done. If the ashes selfies are posted for personal attention or to highlight the day's message, a few years ago, when this trend was just getting started, Jesuit Father James Martin, now editor-at-large at the Catholic weekly magazine America, said only the person posting knows if it is being done for the right reasons. As with most things in life, you need a sense of moderation, and only a person's conscience can tell them why they are posting these things, he told the Wall Street Journal. More U.S. dioceses are turning to foundations to help meet their financial and fundraising priorities, and foundation executives in the diocesan realm believe they've only begun to tap into the potential for these gifts. Dan McCune, executive director of Catholic Community Foundation of Mid-Michigan, which covers the Diocese of Saginaw, said Catholic donors are used to giving to an annual diocesan appeal or to a school fund. They are getting used to it, but we still are not where we want to be, he said. Our donor base in Michigan is about 1,000 people, and they've been very, very good givers, but he thinks the foundation there could attract and retain up to 2,500 donors, and possibly even twice that. In Maine, a previous bishop authorized the establishment of the Catholic Foundation of Maine, covering the statewide Diocese of Portland, according to Elizabeth Badger, its executive director. The reasons to establish the foundation, she said, was to give people the opportunity to make planned gifts to support Catholic ministries in Maine, primarily through endowments. Walter Dillingham, managing director for endowments and foundations for the New York City-based Wilmington Trust and himself a Catholic, said foundations are helping the church to build financial resources in a changing world. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
Gene, thanks for that. Of course, our foundation has been around for 30 years now.
Exactly. That's an exciting milestone.
So, absolutely so. All right, Gene, thanks for that. Let's move on to our interview with Mark Schultz. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Mark Schultz, Dove Award winner, Christian musician, who is coming to join us for the Gift of Hope concert coming up March 19th. We're very excited about that. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And I'm joined by Brian Cooper from the Catholic Community Foundation for Eastern South Dakota. We're going to tag team you this morning, Mark. I hope that's okay.
That's fine. I think I'm awake enough for that.
Good deal. So, very excited about you coming to do this benefit concert for Catholic Family Services, the Gift of Hope Fund for Catholic Family Services. People, whether they're familiar with their music or not, but as they become familiar with their music, they really get the connection to a lot of the work that Catholic Family Services does, certainly in the area of adoptions and grief support work and so many other things that actually are a part of a lot of your music.
Well, that's a neat thing, you know. I'm connected as well, just by being adopted and telling my story and the music that goes through that. But as well, my wife now and I are adopting through Catholic Charities here in Nashville a baby from China who we will probably have by next December. And so this is a neat thing for me to be a part of because so much of my story is wrapped up in it as well.
How great is it, Mark, when the concerts you get to do have such a connection to the beneficiary or to the people that you're here to perform for?
Well, there's nothing better. You know, I remember thinking that when I first started doing music and making records maybe in around 2000, you know, my goal was, gosh, if I could get a record deal, that would be the greatest thing in the world. And then I got a record deal, and a few years later, I rode my bike across the country to raise money for orphans. And, you know, I rode from California to Maine, and we did 14 shows along the way, and we raised $250,000 for orphans. And that was when I realized, oh, you know what? When you have a platform, but you also have a mission, and those two things come together like that, that is better than just having your dream, which mine was. I would love to just do music.
Yeah.
And once that passion woke up in me, that something happened, bloomed inside of me. I remember somebody came to one of my concerts on that trip, and they said, "Man, you are singing stronger. The way you're talking between the songs is so appealing and so meaningful." And so, to me, that's really what it's all about. And I'm glad I've kind of backed into it. It's been a neat process.
Do you kind of feel that that's, you've been kind of led in that direction? I mean, your story from beginning to current is rather amazing, how you even got into the business. And that has to, you almost have to think the Holy Spirit's involved, huh?
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, I remember I was in at college, and I read a book that said, "Hey, don't come to Nashville. Only about 1% of the people who come to Nashville to get a record deal." And I remember thinking, "Hey, I think I'm in that 1%." But it was when I came here and realized, "Oh no, I'm so lost, and this is never going to happen." I remember my parents came, and I gave them a tour around town, and we saw the Ryman Auditorium, and my dad said, "Is this where my son's going to play someday?" You know, where they did the country performers performed and whatnot. And I said, "Oh, Dad, I'm never going to get to perform there." And it wasn't soon after that I met a youth minister when I was a waiter, and we had a hot pepper eating contest, and I lost, and I ended up taking a bunch of seventh graders on a ski trip. And I just fell in love with those kids and really started writing songs about them and what God was doing in their lives and the lives of their families. And I was writing songs for them and doing little concerts for them, just for them and their friends. And it grew so big that finally, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, I was at the Ryman Auditorium. And my mom and dad were there, and it was a sold-out show. And I got a record deal that night. And it was really... you know, I tell people a lot of times when I first came to Nashville, it felt like I opened up a closet and there were a bunch of clothes in there that were for me, but I just didn't fit into them yet. And then after I was a youth director for about 7 years and walked life with these kids and with their families, and God was showing me the stories and what he was doing in their lives, finally that closet was open and it was like those clothes finally fit. And I needed that time in my life to have something really meaningful to write songs about.
Yeah, most artists, Mark, talk about, you know, that they write from their personal experiences, and it sounds like yours is a lot the same. And how do you draw inspiration for the great music that you write and perform?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, you know, I had a song a while back called "He's My Son," which was about a dad whose son had cancer, and every night the dad would go into his room and pray over him and say, "Dear God, please take the cancer out of my son. You can give it to me, but don't take my son." And that was based off of one of the kids in our youth group who had cancer. And, you know, the behind the story on that was he lost his hair because of the chemo and didn't want to go to seventh grade anymore. He wanted to retire from the seventh grade. And one day the same kid that duct taped me to the bed when I went on my first ski trip with him, said, "Hey, come pick us all up." And I did. And 14 kids I picked up, and we went over to his house, and in his backyard, they all shaved their heads.
Awesome.
Knocked on his back door. And he came out and, screamed and ran back inside, and they brought him back out and, kicking and screaming. And the next day he went to school, and nobody in his class knew who had cancer because there were 14 kids sitting around him with their head shaved. And so I've just gotten to see these beautiful stories of faith lived out, And I'm grateful that I'm able to just turn those experiences into songs that can encourage other people.
It's kind of the stuff of life, isn't it, that you make into music?
It really is. You know, my first neighbors when I moved to Nashville, Henry and Liz, they were 75 years old, and Liz grew up with Minnie Pearl off of Hee Haw. They were best friends. And every night they would have me over for dinner. They didn't know me. They just knew I was from Kansas. And Henry would tell me, "Hey, did I ever tell you about my first date with Liz?" And say, "No, I don't even know you people." And he said, "Yeah, she used to live here when she was young." And I was 18. I came and asked her dad if I could take her on a date. And he said, "Son, you walk her to the movies, you walk her home, and you promise me you're never going to leave her side." And Henry would tell me that story all the time because he just loved the story. And that was the start of the song called Walking Her Home, which is another story about a man who just loved his wife well and was a great dad and a great father and a great inspirational leader of his home. And even when they were 85 years old and in the nursing home, he was still walking her back home to her room, you know, after dinner. And just a sweet story that I got to be a part of. And again, tell that story so people can be inspired by what real love looks like.
That's a great story, Mark. Talk about a little bit about growing up. You know, you grew up in Colby, Kansas, out there in the western part of the state. How did that, you know, your childhood help shape kind of where you're at today and kind of how you look at the world?
Well, I think, number one, I'm grateful for it. And I, you know, to the thrills of my life, I've gone back to the community building where I used to play basketball, you know, and sold out shows of 1,500 people in there. And, you know, we didn't have a very big town, so that's a good portion of the town right there coming to the concerts. And what I said at those concerts was, I'm so grateful to be from a small town because you get to be involved in everything. You know, if you, we used to joke and say, if you weren't in the newspaper three times a week, you probably didn't live in town anymore because, you know, you had to be on the basketball team, the football team, the track team, the baseball team. So you got to be involved in all those sports. But, yet it was a tight knit community, a small community. And so, you knew people and you knew their stories and it was like, I think sometimes I'm grateful that I didn't grow up in a huge city because I don't know that I would feel I wouldn't know where my place was exactly. But in a small town, when you have some success in a small town and you know people and you feel like, man, anything's possible. And then you go out into the bigger world and you see that that's still possible. But you just have a good sense of who you are. And my dad said, you know, I feel like you were probably raised by everybody in this town, even though I had the best parents in the world. Everybody, you know, it takes a village and from the English teacher to the track coach to the basketball coach, it was just a great place to grow up.
Mark, I want to go back to your connection to adoption because that is a theme that kind of runs literally from the very beginning of your life. And as you said, currently you're working to adopt. Why is that become so personal for you? Is it just because of your own connection to it?
I think so. I think that, number one, I'm so grateful that I had a birth mom who made a decision for me before I ever knew what a decision was, and that was to let me live, you know? And so every day that I get up, I there's something in the back of my mind that says, hey, I want to make today worth it, and I want to make God and my birth mom, though I've never met my birth mom, I want to make God and my birth mom proud of the decision that I was able to live and be here. And so, I don't want to waste that. And then, you know, again, when I rode my bike across the country to raise money for orphans was really a highlight for me. And I remember thinking one day as I was kind of training, if it was just to decide if I could actually ride my bike across the country, I think I would stop exercising right now because I don't need to prove that to myself. But I cut out these pictures of these orphans that I was writing for that were from Mexico, and I put them on my map holder. And I said, you know what? For this one, I can ride across the country. Mm. For this one, I can go farther than I've ever gone before, and I can push myself because I realize their life's going to be better for what I'm going to do and what I can give. And something inside of me said, this is right. This is what you need to do, and gave me a lot of encouragement, inspiration to finish.
Talk about your song, Everything to Me. That comes out of this story that you talk about. How, you know, it's kind of a window into your soul and who you are.
Yeah, it is. I you know, what I've learned about being adopted is there's two, if you just think of it as like a mountain and, you know, the Continental Divide was something we went to see when I was a kid. My dad took us to see it in Colorado, and he said, listen, all the snow that's on this side of the mountain runs down this side of the mountain. All the snow on the other side of the mountain runs down the other side of the mountain. And there's a point. And what I realize is sometimes adopted kids are kind of like that too. And they think the ones who think that, gosh, I wasn't wanted and I wasn't needed and I was kind of abandoned, they kind of have a mindset about life. And that is, I guess I'm not good enough and I guess I'll never be worthy of being loved. And then on the other side of the slope that goes down the other side, you've got those kids that say, you know what, I'm grateful that my birth mom gave me up for adoption because I was able to live, and now God's got a plan for me, and I know God's going to see that through, and I don't want to miss what God has for me, and I know it's going to be special. And my job, I think, through that song is to help people see that God has a plan for me. God is excited that, you know, God doesn't make mistakes. And it's a pretty neat thing to see kids after concerts say, you know what, that's my theme song. And to hear their parents say, you know, he or she really struggled with being adopted, and they heard this song and they realized what a gift it is that they've been given, and that they're loved, and that they had a birth mom or chose to give them life. And that's the most special thing in the world. So for me, it really is a window. The first time my adopted mom heard that song in the car, just tears ran down her face, and she just had a big smile on her face, and she just held my hand, and she was so grateful for that. And one day I hope my birth mom will hear that. Again, when I do concerts, I just don't say, hey, I've got the greatest parents in the world, because I do, but I say, I've got the greatest parents in the world, but I also have, the greatest gift in the world, which is the birth mom who gave me life. And I'm awfully grateful for that.
Mark, one of the things that Catholic Family Services does in adoptions these days, and really has for the last, you know, 20 or more years, is focused on the open adoption, where birth families and adoptive families kind of are involved at least somewhat together. Is that something that you maybe wished you could have experienced?
Well, that's something I don't know anything about. And one of the things I jokingly say this, and this is just an honest place. You know, when I look at my mom or I look at my dad, I say, gosh, they're not my genes. And so I say, you know, maybe my dad he used to work at a college. He was the dean of students. And part of the fun for me of not knowing who my biological parents are is I feel like I can be anybody I want to be, you know? There's no ceiling like, oh, my dad was only this, so I can only be that. Or my mom was this, so I have to, you know, fit into that mold. And there's something fun to me about not knowing. And then I can be like, well, of course I can sing and sell millions of records because I don't know who my birth mom is. Well, you know, and there's something fun about that coming from a small town. And people say, how did you come from our small town? And how are you doing that now? And I just say, I don't know. But there's something fun about that. But at the end of the day also, one day I think it would be so neat to meet my birth mom and either that or write a letter or something to say, I'm so grateful and I've had a great life and you didn't make a mistake. And that's the message that I hope I would get across. But it's such a changing, you're right now. The open adoptions are, I think it could be for a lot of people, kind of a healthy thing to kind of know where they come from and know who they are if they have those questions.
Now, changing gears a little bit here, Mark, talk a little bit about and tell people the Gift of Hope concert is March 19th here at O'Gorman High School in Sioux Falls at 2 p.m. What can people expect? They've heard you on the radio. They probably have your CDs, you know, iTunes, all that stuff. But what can people experience when they come to see you live in concert?
Yeah, it's such a neat thing. I got to tell you, it's my favorite thing to do in the whole world. And I come home and I tell my wife, you know, I just am so glad I found what I'm supposed to do. And that is to sing these songs that God's given me and people are inspired by those songs, but also even more so the stories behind the songs. I just did a concert a couple nights ago and somebody said, number one, we knew your songs off the radio and we knew we really liked them. But number two, we didn't know the stories behind those songs and we almost like the stories behind the songs better than your own songs. And three, You're way funnier than we expected you to be. We laughed, we cried, we sang, it was the whole thing. And so I think that's it. I think it's very much, it's not a show where you come to see the lights and the smoke. It's a show where a lot of people will come and say, hey, we came to a concert and felt like we hung out at a friend's house and just talked and played some songs on the piano and heard some stories that were uplifting. And to me, it's one of the thrills of my life to get to perform because I feel like it was what I was meant to do.
That's great. You mentioned your family, your wife and your boys and obviously adding to it, that has become a pretty important piece of your story as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, to now get to see life through the eyes of a five-year-old. We just had a birthday the other day, and a 2 or 3 year old, and sometimes, you know, it's a great thrill. I haven't really slept in the last 5 years like I did before we have kids, and I'm looking forward to one day when everybody wants to sleep in again, and that'll be great. But I think it's a great. It's a great thing. It's sleep deprivation. It's learning how to maneuver in this life with kids, and I just love it. I'm lucky that I'm married to the best mom in the world, and she's just so great. And so it's a fun project we're embarked on.
Well, Mark, we really appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today, and I speak for everybody. We are so excited to have you. Come to Sioux Falls for the Gift of Hope concert to help support Catholic Family Services. And I can't imagine anybody else being a better entertainer to come to this just because of your personal story and the connection that you have to the same mission that Catholic Family Services has.
Well, I'm excited to do it. I can tell you the folks that come are going to have a great time. And I don't say that just because I love what I do. I feel like God's going to be in it because of my story and because of the great work that y'all are doing there. And so I think when you come together for the right reasons with the right heart, God shows up and does amazing things. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Very good, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll see you in a month.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, Gene, the interview we did with Mark Schultz was before we knew we were adding the second show, but very exciting that we sold out the first one and are adding the second one.
Great opportunity for people that were looking for tickets and had gotten shut out because the first one was sold out. Now they have another chance, so they better get in there and get those tickets.
Yeah, and those tickets should be available really soon. Watch the website, sfcatholic.org, or the foundation website. That's ccfesd.org, and you'll be able to find out information about those tickets there. Also, we should note, of course, this week is
Ash Wednesday, the start of Lent, so people need to connect with their parish and find out when they can get in there and get ashes and begin the season right.
It is not a holy day of obligation.
But a holy day of opportunity.
But a lot of folks treat it as though it was, and that's a beautiful thing.
It is.
A great way to start the season of Lent and a great way to kind of reflect on on where we're at.
You got plenty of time to do that, so get ready.
All right. So, again, check your parishes in terms of when that will be. And, of course, a lot of parishes offer extra things during the season of Lent, and we should watch for that,
too. Good opportunity to integrate with your parish and get more involved.
Yeah, absolutely so. All right. Thanks, Gene. That's our time for Catholic Views this morning. We thank you for being with us. Please join us again next Sunday morning.